So tell me what the main point that you're trying to drive home during your talk here today about going gone.
Yeah, see, I think that the young church today, these young adults who are disaffiliating, no longer identifying as Catholic, they are telling us something about ourself. And I think that's really important because the way we frame this issue is critical. If we think that they are a problem to be solved, then our approach will look like recruitment. As opposed to, what if the disaffiliated are a gift to the church? What if they are a grace to the church? What if the disaffiliated is one of the ways that the Holy Spirit today is operating in the church? And then the task becomes, what's the Holy Spirit telling us? What's the Holy Spirit saying to the faith community through the experience of the disaffiliated? That I think that's the question. That I think there's a grace there. If we listen to their stories, listen to their lived experiences, listen to their concerns and to their questions, I think there's a grace there for the Catholic community. I think there's a grace there for pastoral ministers today in terms of how we respond to them. I think the Holy Spirit's alive and well and speaking to us through the experiences of the disaffiliated.
In terms of the disaffiliated, what resources can the church bring to bear to help them get back on track, so to speak, in terms of their faith?
See, we sometimes as a church, sometimes as Catholics, I think we miss the rich treasure of Catholic tradition. And I'm using tradition in a broad sense. I'm not talking about tradition just as teaching, even though teaching is a critical part of that. But I maintain that one of the challenges for us as Catholics is to recapture this concept of Catholicism as a comprehensive way of living. That I believe that Christianity was a lifestyle before it became a belief system. That the earliest Christians, they lived their way into this religion as followers of Jesus, as disciples of Jesus. They lived their way into that by living the way that the disciples were living. And so we as Catholics then, Catholicism as a comprehensive way of living responds effectively to what I call the three dimensions of faith formation: head, heart, and hands. That I believe that comprehensive faith formation, catechesis, evangelization, there certainly is a cognitive dimension to this about what we believe as Catholics. There's also a heart dimension to this. And the heart dimension, the affective dimension, is evidence in our relationship with Jesus. That's how I see the heart. We encounter Jesus, and we enter into a relationship with Jesus. And there's a hands dimension, and it's the hands of witness. It's the hands of justice. It's the hands of service. And what I like about that little triad of head, heart, and hands is that for youth and young adults today, any one of those three is a way to enter into Catholicism as a comprehensive way of living. For some, they start with the teachings of the church. And for some of them, it's the encounter with Jesus. For some, it's the encounter through justice and service. And the key is that this is not a sequential process. It's a cyclic process: head, heart, and hands. And I would maintain, if you think of this as a triad, head, heart, and hands, right in the middle, I would put a fourth H for home. That I think what young people need, I think what young adults are crying for is a spiritual home. And so I would advocate for a comprehensive approach to Catholicism, and I would call it the Catholic 4-H. It would be head, heart, hands, and home. And so I think it's all in our tradition. I think, though, we just have to recapture that tradition of thinking comprehensively about our approach to faith formation.
That's well said. So now, with that in mind, you had mentioned in your talk earlier, you had mentioned about the hungers. So obviously they're hungering for something. Can you define what that is so that people can understand? Because obviously the church can meet those hungers, but if it doesn't understand the hungers, how can it meet it?
Yeah, I'm convinced, and this comes out of my pastoral experience of working with young people for low these 45 years. I think there are these five underlying hungers that I find evidence in youth and young adults, and truthfully, I find them in adults too. But here's what I have found. I found first that There's a hunger for meaning and purpose. I think youth and young adults especially have a hunger for the need to make sense out of their life. Is there a plan for me? What am I called to do? Is there a work that's mine to accomplish? In the faith world, the question sounds like, does God have a plan for me, or what does God want of me? No matter how you phrase that question, whether it sounds like a secular question or a religious question, it's the same hunger for meaning and purpose, because I believe that the lack of meaning, the lack of purpose, is absolutely frightening to people today. I think it's frightening to youth and young adults. If they think that there's no reason behind what we do, that is incredibly frightening. And I would maintain that our scriptures, our experience of God, our knowledge of Jesus responds to that sense of meaning and purpose. I think that Jesus lays out a sense of meaning and purpose. So I think that's the first hunger. The second hunger, especially for youth and young adults, I think there's a hunger for recognition. I think young people are hungry to be recognized as having gifts to share with the wider community. I think sometimes they feel like, I don't bring anything to the table. And I believe that part of the hunger here is, do I have value? Do I have worth? And so the hunger for recognition for me is tied into dignity, self-esteem, self-worth. It's all part of that. But it's the hunger that I have something that can be shared with the community. The third hunger is the hunger for belonging. They want to be connected. The hunger to be connected to something bigger than themselves. It starts with their family. It's evidenced in their schools. It should be evidenced in our faith community. This hunger to belong to something bigger. I want to be in a place where I am welcomed for who I am, where my gifts are acknowledged, and where I belong. And then the fourth hunger is the hunger for justice. Sometimes we think it might be the least obvious, but my experience of young people is that they've absorbed the global agenda, and I think they've made a commitment to compassion and service, that things ought to be right for everyone, that everyone has a right to the goods, to the resources of the world. And so I think there's a hunger for justice, and I think the fifth is the hunger for the holy. And I think the hunger for the holy is imprinted on their soul. I think it's part of our spiritual DNA that we as Catholic Christians, we believe in Genesis, we are created in the image and likeness of God. And that says to me that imprinted on our soul is this hunger for the Creator. And so I think these hungers, this hunger for the holy, the hunger for holy, hunger for justice, the hunger for connection and for recognition, and hunger for meaning and purpose, I think those hungers drive us. And for youth and young adults, I think they will go where those hungers are fed. And I'm convinced that within the Catholic faith community, everything is in our tradition that would allow us to respond to those hungers. But the hungers give us a way of looking at what is going on in the lives of these youth and young adults, and what are we called to be as a faith community? And I think we're called to be the community that responds to those hungers. Mm.
That's well said. So you mentioned also the importance of listening and empathy. Can you talk a little bit about that in relation to the disaffiliated? Like why we as church need to have those that mindset?
Yeah. See, I think the starting point is to realize and to recognize that in their stories, in the life experiences of our youth and young adults, The Holy Spirit is present and active. So the challenge becomes, can we create opportunities? And sometimes an opportunity is a one-on-one conversation, and sometimes these opportunities are with several young adults or youth in a group, depending on your setting. But can we create the atmosphere that provides them a safe place to share their journey? And their journey needs to be shared both with the joys and the hopes in their journey, but also in the fears, the questioning, the doubts, the uncertainties in their journey. I think they're looking for a place to share those, to share that journey. The challenge for pastoral leaders is to listen in such a way that we elicit their stories. And so that the skill is to listen to learn about their journey. It's listen to understand their journey, as opposed to, or to resist the temptation to listen to respond. Because sometimes, and this is a very human thing, we are in conversation with people about anything, and as a person is speaking, we're already planning our response to what they're saying. And I would maintain that when we do that, we are missing some of the key points in their story. And it doesn't mean we don't respond at some point, but I would maintain that the first step is not responding at all. It's really listening to their story. And one of the things that I've learned about youth and young adults is that sometimes they are naturally distrustful of pastoral leaders because they think we come in with an agenda. And it's because we often come in with an agenda. And so, in that first conversation, if we begin to respond, and oftentimes response sounds like correct misperceptions, we're not going to go any further in the story. We're not going to hear any more because they're testing us. They're waiting to see. And if we can resist the temptation to respond to correct, if we can really come out of that space of that empathetic space of, I just want to listen to your story. Tell me the story. Tell me the feelings behind this story. Tell me about your hopes, your fears, your joys, your struggles, your doubts. Tell me your story. Then I think that's when the church is most credible, when we can be in that kind of a space with our youth and young adults, where they feel safe enough to share their story in a non-judgmental setting so that they can be really heard.
Last question. So you said something really interesting. You said we have a faith community issue in how we pass on faith to the faith community. So can you unpack that? What do you mean? What did you mean by that?
Yeah. See, I would maintain what happens with youth and young adults is what I think disaffiliation among youth and young adults is a mirror. It's pointing towards deeper issues. So that I would maintain this is not just a youth and young adult issue. It's the way that we as a faith community pass on faith to succeeding generations. How do we as the Catholic Christian community, how do we pass on to our children and to our children's children? How do we pass on to them this understanding of Catholicism as a comprehensive way of living that goes back to the cognitive, affective, and behavioral, the head, heart, and hands? How do we pass that on to our community? Because that's the issue. Because the hungers are there. The hungers are there. Are we as a faith community, are we doing the things that respond to those hungers? That becomes the question. And so I would say that youth and young adults today are presenting a gift to the church. I think they are a gift to the church because they're going to cause the church to step back and to honestly assess what are we doing as a community? Have we made some false assumptions about our youth and young adults? And are we willing to examine honestly how we pass on faith and how we engage the hearts of our youth and young adults in our faith community?